is one of those weekday mornings right now. It's the Monday morning edition of the Get Up and Go Breakfast Show, and at this time we get to connect with one of the team of Cliff Decker Hofmeyr Inc. this morning, the turn of director Gavin Stansfield. Gavin, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Brad. Thanks very much.
Yeah, good having you with us. I'm excited as well to look at another case study as we did last week. So often we hear a lot of technical things around labor law issues and law issues. It's hard for us who aren't in the industry like yourself to put it into perspective. But when you bring out a case study, it helps us a lot. So looking forward to this one this morning around labor brokers and the recent case of Assign Labor Brokers.
Yes, Brad. This was actually, it was a decision of the Labor Appeal Court in July last year. The decision was quite controversial at the time. It went on appeal. It's bypassing the Supreme Court of Appeal. They went straight to the Constitutional Court because it does raise a number of constitutional issues. And the Constitutional Court heard the matter last Thursday. So its judgment is reserved. We don't know what they're going to say yet. However, this issue surrounding temporary employment services, they call the TES in terms of the LRA, the Labor Relations Act, but of course more commonly known as labor brokers, of course, with the judgment or the argument rather last week in the Constitutional Court, this has now become a very topical issue again, and as I said, we await judgment.
So how did it end in the Constitutional Court, taking all of those skips? For those of us who don't understand, isn't there a process that needs to be followed, or was it of such a nature that this was the only way to deal with it?
Well, basically, you can apply for leave directly to the Constitutional Court if you can satisfy the court. What I mean by that is, normally it would go from the Labor Appeal Court to the Supreme Court of Appeal and only then on to the Constitutional Court. However, if you can make out a case that you should be permitted to approach the Constitutional Court directly and therefore bypass the SEA, and this is on account of, as I've said, constitutional issues, and the Concord has the ability to determine the matter directly upon such an application for direct access.
How do labor brokers work? How are they brought in? Are they obviously from outside brought into a company? How do they function and what is their purpose?
Right. So let's get into the nuts and bolts of what happened here and why this is, in particular, the Labor Appeal Court's decision in July last year was so topical, and, of course, why it's gone straight to the Concord. So basically, as I'm sure many people know, a labor broker provides not a service, but it provides labor. That's the fundamental distinction between service providers in our law and providers who provide labor as opposed to the provision of a service. A very good example to highlight the difference between the two is the provision of a service might be a security service by one of your security guarding companies, where they're not necessarily just providing labor, they're providing a sort of turnkey approach where they will come and provide an all-inclusive security solution for a shopping center, as an example. So, yes, they supply the guards, and the guards are employed by the company. However, they argue, of course, that they're not providing just merely labor. They're providing the service as a whole. If you think of a shopping center as well, if you think of an underground parking management system as another example, where they provide not only the people who come and service all the parking machines, the automated fare collection machines, but, of course, they will provide the machines, they will update them, and they will service them. That is a provision of a service as opposed to the provision of labor. Labor is simply there, and this is what labor brokers do, to cater generally for fluctuating demands in terms of labor. So if you think, for example, in the hospitality industry where you have fluctuating demands, obviously, over season, and you're selling 100% of your rooms over season, whereas in winter, perhaps you might only be selling 60 or 50% of your rooms, naturally you're going to have an increased demand for labor. And that's where the labor broker comes in, and they provide this labor on a temporary basis. So what happened in the matter was, this is exactly what happened. The labor broker was providing what it referred to as temporary labor to a company who was making use of their services. In order to understand what the dichotomy is in terms of the LRA, one needs to understand an amendment which was introduced to the LRA on the 1st of January 2015. Mm-hmm. Brad, this was a fairly far-reaching amendment. And basically what it says is that you are no longer rendering temporary services as an employee of a labor broker if you are placed and working at a client's premises for a period longer than 3 months. So in other words, on my example, if you get placed by a labor broker at a hotel and you're there for longer than 3 months, what the Act says is that you would become a deemed employee, not only of the labor broker, because, of course, the previous position prior to the 1st of January 2015 was that you were employed at all times by the labor broker. Your employment did not transfer, or you did not become employed by the client at any point. However, amendment in January 2015 says you will now, if you are placed at a client for longer than 3 months, you will have a dual employment relationship in the sense that you will be employed not only by the labor broker, but you will also be deemed to be an employee of the client. And that was an important deeming provision, simply because it gave employees, the so-called vulnerable category of employees, protection if the labor broker was a fly-by-night. If they lost the contract and all of a sudden they didn't pay outstanding wages, or they didn't see the need to retrench anybody because, of course, they're just operating a shell. So it was open to abuse. So what the legislators did is they said you will have a claim against the hotel directly in instances where you can't claim against your employer. Along comes the LAC. So it was recognized more or less that there was this dual employment relationship, and that you would have this, as I said, a statutory employment relationship between yourself and the client after 3 months at the same client. The LAC comes along in July last year, and it says, quite controversially, it says that once that deeming provision kicks in after 3 months and you become the deemed employee of the client, in my case, the hotel, there's no longer a dual employment relationship. The labor broker falls out of the picture entirely. In other words, there's only a statutory employment relationship that exists between the employee and the client directly, and the labor broker falls out of the picture. There is no need, says the LAC, for this joint employment scenario where both the labor broker as well as the client act as joint employers, and your claim exists only against the client. Now, that is very far-reaching because, of course, that brings into question the entire sort of viability or the need, quite frankly, for labor brokers going forward, because if that's going to be the case where the client's going to know that, well, I'm going to be deemed to be the sole employer after a period of 3 months, as I said, it's going to affect the industry quite materially, and hence it's ended up in the Constitutional Court.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So it becomes a case of after 3 months, if the person is still working the client, then they become permanent and have the same rights. But then are you drawn out of this labor broking company and you then become a permanent employee of where you are? Are you then no longer in the employ of the labor company and they have one less employee?
Exactly. I say exactly because these are the problems that you start to think of. Because, of course, you can have, and practically, many of these labor brokers will all have service level agreements with their clients, in terms of which the hotel pays the labor broker pays the employee on a weekly or monthly basis. What happens to that SLA after the 3 month deeming provision? Does that SLA automatically terminate? Does it mean that we can still have the SLA in place and it has no impact on the SLA? However, then why have the labor broker in the picture at all?
Exactly.
These are some of the questions, as I've said, that have been posed, and of course were argued all at the Constitutional Court last week. And these are some of the questions that the Court is going to have to grapple with, and no doubt whatever its finding is, as I've said, going to have a profound impact on the nature of the industry going forward.
Yeah, and in the South African context, well, true anyway, but particularly in the South African context, of course, it also involves the unions. I mean, they obviously would have a lot to say about this as well, so there'll be an added pressure from their side.
Well, of course, the unions have been very happy, and in fact, NUMSA is one of the parties to this dispute. Unions are very happy, of course, to say that all the rights vest in the employer, in the client, because it's generally the client, who is in many instances the more stable employer of the two. So unions are happy about this, but of course... They have a very a material role to play in all of this, in terms of course, if it was up to the unions, labor broking would be done away with entirely.
Exactly.
Even that 3 month period where people can legitimately be employed on a temporary basis by a labor broker, that's something that the unions would like to see done away with entirely and collapse labor broking and have direct employment between employee and client only.
Now, you've got us very interested in this case. It's hard to say when a case will end, but when are they expecting judgment? What are your thoughts on that, just in terms of closing this discussion?
Generally, sort of a month or three, depends on the Concord's caseload, but we should know within the next 2 to 3 months. And watch this space. We'll definitely fill a slot on a Monday morning feature.
Look forward to that. As always, great chatting to you, Director at Cliff Decker-Hoffmeyer and Gavin Stansfield. Thanks for your time this morning.
You're welcome, Brad. Anytime.
Bye.